Are you ready?
To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank the speakers.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson. Friday.
Because look, the bills add up. Food, rent, gas, back to school clothes, prescription medication. After all that, for many families, there's not much left at the end of the month.
That, of course, is Kamala Harris, the Democrat Party's accidental candidate for president, who's running for president while interim president Joe Biden serves out the remaining months of what used to be his presidency. And she's describing the America that the Biden-Harris administration has brought about, where mortgage rates have not quite tripled since 3 years ago, where consumer prices are up 22%, gasoline up 40%, and of course, it could not possibly be the fault of the Biden-Harris regime. It is the fault of greedy corporations. Happy First Amendment Friday. Glad to have you with me. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day. And on First Amendment Fridays, of course, we always put you first in line if you happen to be a naysayer. If there's somebody who likes Kamala Harris' plan for America, kind of a Soviet-style plan, but that's what it is. I'd be glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you are a naysayer, 866-439-5277, you go to the head of the line. If you'd rather email, it's talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our X poll. I'll explain that one a bit later. But the daily question can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, our great website. So, today, Harris laid out that Soviet-style price control plan for America. The message you just heard from her at the beginning of this segment is where she said Americans today can barely afford the necessities. There's nothing left over at the end of the month. But literally in the same speech, Harris then goes on to describe an American economy that's absolutely fantastic with plentiful jobs and lots of good stuff.
And today, by virtually every measure, our economy is the strongest in the world.
Yay! So let's go Soviet, right?
We have created 16 million new jobs. We've made historic investments in infrastructure, in chips manufacturing, in clean energy. And new numbers this week alone show that inflation is down under 3%.
Under 3%. So that means it is only literally more than twice as high as inflation was when Joe Biden took office, much higher than America has seen in the last decade, except for Joe Biden. So Harris proposes that in that fantastic economy, America must adopt government-driven price controls, and not by the U.S. Congress. Oh, no, it'll be done by the deep state. She wants the Federal Trade Commission, which isn't elected by the American people and isn't answerable to the American people. They will decide if your local grocery store or gas station is price gouging, like the wage and price controls that failed so miserably in America 50 years ago under a Republican president named Nixon. And the centrally controlled Soviet Union, they had price controls as well. They went broke about a third of a century ago. Kamala Harris's plan, I kid you not, includes $1.7 trillion in handouts. I think they think that she can buy her way to the presidency, even though Joe Biden could not. And then a federal ban on what she calls grocery store price gouging.
And I will work to pass the first ever federal ban on price gouging on food.
Yes, she did say gouging and say gouging. Got a little bit of Joe Biden in there.
My plan will include new penalties for opportunistic companies that exploit crises and break the rules. And we will support smaller food businesses that are trying to play by the rules and get ahead.
What are the rules exactly in the grocery business? I would say you buy products and then you sell them for a small percentage markup. And I'll give you some actual numbers from the industry. Is it the grocery stores gouging that is sending prices up? In 2023, profit margins in America's grocery industry hit a whopping 1.6%. Let me translate that for you. You go to Walmart. You go to any store you want to go to. You go to Winco. And when you go in there and say buy a month's worth of groceries for $1,000 at a 1.6% margin, why, that evil gouging grocery store, they made $16 on your $1,000 purchase. Total expenses have increased. Wages have gone up. Energy has gone up. Every cost paid by businesses has gone up, and their price margins are 1.6%. Exactly who is gouging if they're only making a 1.6% profit margin? Listen to Kamala Harris on economics. To Donald Trump on her economics, I should say.
She's running on the Maduro plan. We call it the Maduro plan, like something straight out of Venezuela or the Soviet Union. This announcement is an admission that her economic policies have totally failed and caused really a catastrophe for our country, and beyond that, a catastrophe in the world.
I'm going to tell you that Kamala Harris' plan, no holds barred, is communist. Now, I know that some of you are going to find that kind of harsh, but let's take Kamala at her word. Should she somehow end up in the Oval Office beyond all odds, she promises executive orders in the first 100 days, not the U.S. Congress, to impose price controls on virtually everything, food, fuel, and rent. Now, some of you may think that's a great idea. I've already pointed out it didn't work out in America 50 years ago. It certainly didn't work out in the former Soviet Union. The fact is, if you look at inflation over the last 3 years, consumer prices went up at the same rate as producer prices. Wow, isn't that amazing? That is, the cost of things went up. Most of it driven by gigantic spending from Capitol Hill and from the Biden administration, the price you get charged goes up. So if the meat packers have bigger expenses, they pass that on to your grocery store, and your lunch meat costs you more at the deli. That is economics 101, but I suspect Kamala may have skipped that class in college. She is also proposing $25,000 in down payment for first-time home buyers. That's going to cost taxpayers about $40 billion. That's part of that $1.7 trillion giveaway I talked about. Even a liberal newspaper like the Washington Post was not impressed by Harris's plan. Listen to columnist Catherine Rampell from the WAPO.
The particular way that this is written, which is likely to be the template for any proposal that Harris would eventually embrace, is especially bad in that it just bans excessive prices, grossly excessive prices, grossly excessive profit margins, and says that the Federal Trade Commission can use any metric it deems appropriate to decide what that would mean, which basically says, like, it's not going to be markets, it's not going to be supply and demand that's determining how much your grocery store charges you for milk or for eggs. It's going to be some bureaucrat in DC, which seems like totally unworkable, first of all, for the FTC to be deciding like how much Kroger charges for eggs in Michigan.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. You know, 30 years ago, I did a week of TV news stories in the former Soviet Union. I saw empty grocery stores. The prices were low, but literally nothing was for sale. So if you don't mind that happening, you're going to love Kamala Harris's price controls. But if you like to eat, you ought to vote to send her to the unemployment line. You're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Actually want to be at. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say. This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
I've always thought that it was dangerous for anybody, a pundit or a journalist, to predict that a government policy is going to kill people, but I'm prepared to make that prediction now. And what it has to do with was Oregon's experiment with drug legalization. Remember when they effectively adopted de facto legalization of all the hard drugs in Oregon? And what you ended up with was literally thousands of people dying over the last 2 years. And thousands of people have died for similar reasons in Washington state. So the Oregon legislature finally acted. I mean, when the dead bodies pile up high enough, even the dimwits of the legislature will do something. So they passed House Bill 4002. They said, we're going to recriminalize drugs. Only in the very law they passed, they said, we want to make it a criminal offense to have hard drugs, but we don't want anybody to be prosecuted. We don't want anybody to go to jail. We want them to be deflected. They invented a brand new word. Now, where is the place where this is going to crash and burn the worst and result in the greatest number of dead bodies? That would, of course, be Multnomah County. I mean, in a big blue political state, Multnomah County is Arctic blue. It is crazy. So what did they do? The legislature said you have to set up a deflection center. Now, in theory, it's going to open about 2 weeks from now, but they're already announcing it may not open 2 weeks from now. We're not ready. They've had hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to prepare. They've had months to get ready, and they say we still not be, may not be ready, and it's going to kill people. In Multnomah County, they say a plan is to open the deflection center next month. Let me tell you the dirty little secret that Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson probably won't mention to you. Under the policy, the county considers a person successfully deflected, remember a term that has never existed in law before. If they receive a screening, somebody looks at them and says, yep, you're addicted to drugs. A service referral, meaning call this number and you can sign up for drug addiction treatment, and that they engage with that service within 30 days. And if you wonder about that term, engage, it's not like getting ready to get married. It means you just talk to the folks about treatment. That's it. That's all they're going to do. They don't even have a sobering center in this place. A statement put out by Vega Peterson says, we're still planning to open on September 1st. However, she said, if at any point it looks like they can't do so because operational plans do not line up, they will need more time. Now, our question of the day, and this comes in from Cheryl Wallace. Yesterday, Kamala Harris' surrogate came on the show to tell me that she would make the best president in the United States. This guy claimed that she and Joe Biden have solved the insulin cost problem for millions of Americans. I told the guy that Donald Trump had that problem handled till Biden erased the Trump solution to create the problem and then claimed that he solved it. Here's what I heard from Lars listener Cheryl Wallace. You said that Trump had insulin down to 3509. The guest said you're wrong. Guest was incorrect. The last fall, the last quarter of Trump's term, I received my insulin for $35. As soon as Biden took office, he canceled the plan. The $35 went back to $90 for me. I pay $120 a month for my medication. Insulin is over and above my monthly meds, signed Cheryl Wallace. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I want to give today's Daily Grill to dishonest judges and dishonest prosecutors. The prosecutor actually was the good guy in this case, Josh Coutinho. So they had a dust up between the Proud Boys and the folks from Antifa. And all of the Proud Boys were called Proud Boys in the court cases. But then they just convicted Alisa Azar, who claimed to be a journalist. She was not a journalist. And in fact, the court records reflect that. She was convicted of the crime, but a press release came out that talked all about the Proud Boys and mentioned the conviction of Alisa Azar, but without mentioning who she was affiliated with. So I asked the DA of Clackamas County, why aren't you saying anything about Antifa? And he said the judge literally ordered them not to refer to Alisa Azar as a member of Antifa, but all of the Proud Boys got identified as Proud Boys. Hence the Daily Grill today to the judge in that case. And I'll find out the judge's name. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Andrew writes, and Lars, I read that Kamala's economic plan includes building 3 million houses and expanding the child care credit to 6,000. She somehow believes that huge new government programs will magically reduce inflation. How did the Green New Deal affect us? We got a big increase to the national debt, inflation, and not much to show for all the money for the average American. This plan will double down on that failure and waste. It reminds me of the joke about a fellow declaring to his friends that he's working on his second $1 million. His friends offer congratulations on joining the millionaire club. Then the boaster declares, well, the first million was too hard, so now he's working on his second million. Will we be voters, and will the voters believe Harris? I hope nobody is that foolish. It sounds like we are going to the border to me. She hasn't fixed the border that she helped break. What makes anybody think she'll do any better on the economy that she helped ruin? Signed, Andrew. It's First Amendment Friday. All subjects are fair game. Let's start with Chuck, a naysayer. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program. We love naysayers. What do you and I disagree about today?
Well, I think Joel deserves a raise because he has to put up with people like me.
I agree. Okay? He has to put up with people like you, and so he got a raise this year.
All right. Well, good.
Way ahead of you on that, buddy.
All right. I wanted to talk about the weird messaging that I'm seeing from the Trump campaign and the Harris campaign. So I'm down in Longview here on the Industrial Way, and they've got a privately owned billboard that says, "Make groceries and gas affordable again."
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, that's, make groceries and gas affordable again.
What's wrong with that?
Vote for Trump. Well, I mean, that's communist, isn't it? That's communist price.
No, it's not. No, he's not talking about price. Let's be clear. Kamala Harris wants price controls. What Donald Trump wants to do is reduce costs by the things the government doesn't do. Government regulation jacks up government taxes, Jack. You don't want to hear the answer? I won't give it to you. I'll give it to everybody else. What do you say?
When a Democrat runs up the bill for the national debt, it's called communism.
No, Chuck, don't put words in my mouth. I said that wage and price controls, when ordered by the government, that's communism. That is what they refer to as a centrally planned economy. You know, the old Soviet Union had a centrally planned economy, and it failed badly. Having central planning in America, I'd even admit it was a Republican president, Richard Nixon, who imposed for 90 days wage and price controls. It was an overt disaster. Republicans agreed with that. Democrats agreed with that. Donald Trump is not suggesting the government control the price of anything. Kamala Harris, on the other hand, just rolled out her plan to control the price of everything. She wants to put price controls on groceries, on rent, on energy, and everything else. And anybody who's ever seen what has happened from a distance in Venezuela, you understand when the government controls the price of everything, the grocery stores and the gas pumps are empty. And that's the way it works. That is communism or socialism, which is just a short step on the way to communism. It's First Amendment Friday.
The Lars Larson Show. Broadcasting from his socially distanced bunker to yours, it's Sanitized Entertainment. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program, and welcome back to my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday. We open up the phone lines. Every subject is fair game, and I usually have at least a couple of contributions to make. So if you want to join in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, as you can tell, we put you to the head of the line. Although it is nice when you'll take questions. I'll take questions from anyone. I will give you an honest answer every single time. Let me mention this. There's a brand new ranking of America's states, 1 through 50, 58 if you're an Obama fan. Washington State now ranks dead last as being the most dangerous state in America. Wallet Hub did the ranking, and if you think, oh, Oregon did better, not much. They are three spots behind Washington State. The score took into account violent crime, property crime, traffic-related fatalities, total law enforcement employees per capita. The Washington State ranks as the single most dangerous state in America. And why might that be? Well, under-policing is one problem. Laws that allow the use of illegal drugs, legalized pot, that's a traffic problem and can be a fatality problem as well. There are a lot of reasons. Courts that don't like to convict people, DAs that don't want to prosecute people, and legislatures that want to make drugs legal. All of those things contribute to making it a dangerous place, and that's a sad statement. Today's X-Poll, but this is on the plus side. Are you ready? Should police use drones as first responders to get eyes on the scene faster? Without knowing more about it, I think it's a great idea right out of the gate. And I'll tell you where it's happening. Redmond, Washington is now using drones to respond to 911 calls, not in every situation. And it's not the whole response. It only means that if you get a report of, say, an assault in progress or a carjacking, if you could quickly get a drone over that locality while the police are on the way in cars at a much slower rate, could you track the bad guy? Yes. Could you get the back in custody more quickly? In many cases, yes. Could you maybe find, get identifying photos and video of the person involved in committing the assault? Yeah. So, King 5 actually deserves credit. They reported first this summer that police in Redmond are using drones to respond to 911 calls, but they're currently limited. And I'm not kidding. You talk about stupid federal regulations. You know, so you want to send a drone out. There's a robbery going on at the 7-Eleven. So they said, let's get a drone on the way. We can get eyes on the scene. We'll see if anybody's hurt. We'll see if anybody's dead. We'll find out who the suspects are and maybe even be able to track them from the air. I kid you not, the FAA's current rules say that while one officer is operating the drone and watching real time through a camera, another officer, and it sounds like something out of the Babylon Bee, has to run to the roof of the police station and put his eyes on the drone as it's flying where it's going. That's what the FAA requires. Now, if you could get rid of that rule and say the drone is self-operative, there are lots of drones that are capable of avoiding objects, trees, telephone poles, other things in the air, that you could make this a lot simpler. But so far, I think it's a terrific idea, and I'd like to know your opinion as well. Let's go to Hawkeye. Hey, Hawkeye, how are things in Prosser, Washington?
Things are good, Lars. I wanted to bring to your attention a class action lawsuit brought by Steve Berman of Hagens Berman out of Seattle.
Yeah.
And what this is, it's a Sherman antitrust lawsuit against 18 major multifamily housing landlords across the nation that are it's called Rent Maximizer through Yardi system. And it's very, very damaging to the real estate market. I was a property manager for a company called Brittany Management.
Yep.
And they are also using that Yardi software. I just don't know if they're using that Rent Maximizer. But we can see a 6% increase of all the rents going up because they're pooling the information against the Sherman antitrust laws.
But so is, let me ask you something. Do you think it should be, because if you were setting the rents, if you were a landlord, you said you were a manager, but if you were a landlord and you said, I've got a house to rent, I wonder what I should rent it for. Well, not knowing anything more about it than that, I might say, well, how big is the house and how, where is it? You know, size, bedrooms and all that. I'd go on maybe one of the real estate sites like Zillow or Redfin, and I'd say, what are houses like that renting for? And then I'd likely put my rents in about the same range. If I said, well, there are a bunch of other two-bedroom, one-bathroom houses of about the same condition as my house. I don't have a rental house, but I'll make my rents about the same. Isn't this just a bigger version of that?
What this is it's multifamily apartment complexes. It's not
right.
Individuals. And yes, we want to, you always do your market research. But what this computer program with AI is doing is each landlord is saying, here's how many bedrooms and baths in my apartment.
Yeah.
Here's the square footage and the location. And so they're inputting it all in. So each of them is inputting their information, which is fine. But what they're doing is the computer is then helping them set the price. Like price fixing used to be done in, you know, smoky back rooms.
I guess, but I guess I wonder, What is the difference between a landlord who in the old days would have opened up the classified pages, gone to the rentals and said, what is everybody else charging for this? I think I'll charge about the same amount. Is there any coordination among the landlords to where if all the landlords got together in a smoky back room and said, hey, let's all jack our rents in a particular area, Kent or, you know, Prosser or wherever to this amount. Right. Well, that would be price fixing. But if all you're doing is studying what everybody else in your business is charging and you charge about the same, how is that an antitrust violation?
Well, that's why Steve Berman from Hagman Berman has brought this suit. He's the one that brought the $600 billion tobacco industry, and he's gone against Amazon and Toyota and all of them.
So he's made a lot of money by suing on behalf of people where half of what he gets goes to him, or almost half, and the other half actually goes to the victims he claims.
If a lawyer helps get things changed and fixed, it's okay for them to get paid. I don't have a problem with that. Because he started this because when Jack in the Box caused somebody to die and his law firm wouldn't help that young boy's family, he said, somebody's got to step up for the small individual people. And this is definitely impacting not only the Seattle area, which is where the lawsuit was filed.
Let me ask you, though, I never got a clear idea. Do you think he's right that this is price fixing?
I do. The computer, if everyone is given the same information and they raise it up, then other people will see it went up. Then they keep incrementally going up, so they all stay the same. Then it just takes one person to go up another 6%. And then, that one's gone up 6%. That's why prices of these apartments have gone through the roof.
You don't think they've gone through the roof because there's a lack of supply, mostly driven by government restrictions on building?
Right. And all the people that have come into the country illegally,
illegally, who are occupying space. And so when I look at it, they all, you know, Kamala Harris wants to claim that groceries are up, not because of the massive inflation driven by massive government spending of trillions of dollars, but because the grocery stores are greedy, even though their industry-wide profit margin is 1.6% as of last year. And I'm wondering, if they're gouging, they ought to be making a much bigger return than 1.6%. I think the argument falls apart. The other one about the antitrust, I'm not sure about. Can you study what your competition is doing and then model what your prices are against that? I think you can. But then is there coordination among the landlords? That may be an open question. Glad to be with you on a First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network. We'll be back in a moment. More of your phone calls and emails. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Because you can't get enough Lars. Podcast every show at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get your phone calls and emails. Our X poll on this First Amendment Friday: should police use drones as first responders, not only responders, but first responders, to get eyes on the scene faster? I'd answer that one yes. Redmond, Washington, home of Microsoft, it's police are using drones, except they've run up against an FAA rule that is kind of silly. It requires that while one officer is operating the drone, another police officer has to run to the roof of the building and watch the drone as it flies off in the direction of whatever emergency it's responding to, even if it's at night. That means that you've got to tie up two people on that call, in addition to the cops you've got in cars that are responding. And if you're responding in a life safety emergency, say you have a report that somebody has been shot, and you send a drone. You're also sending police cars. The drone gets there and there are three people laying on the pavement. You might actually say, well, send three ambulances instead of just one. Send more responders instead of that. On the other hand, if you arrive at what is reported to be the scene of a massive brawl or riot, and the drone comes over the scene and there's nothing to be seen, then you can divert those responding police cars somewhere else. I think it's a good idea. Today's X-Poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. I asked you yesterday, Donald Trump has proposed and negotiated for three presidential debates, all in September. Kamala Harris has agreed to one in September, and she says the only other one she will do will be in October, after literally millions of Americans have already cast their votes. That's stupid. So I said, should the second presidential debate be held after millions have voted or before? I said before, so did 96% of you. Only 4% of you said yes. Let me go right to Ian, who's calling in from Tacoma, listening on the Radio Northwest Network and our great affiliate KVI. Ian, what's on your mind?
I think Kamala is trying to distract the American public from the fact that inflation's much worse than everybody's saying, and that's why she's going after the price control on the volatiles that are not covered in the inflation report. And then second fast point, talking about the medication, your insulin. Do you remember when the EpiPens all got real expensive?
Yes, and I know why.
I love the hidden part behind that, where the daughter of the House member on the committee that's supposed to control that thing worked for that company.
Yeah, and that, but that was one reason. There was also, I can't remember his name, but the guy, he's sitting in prison now, I think, but he bought the company, and it was one of the only providers of that product. So unlike insulin, which is made by a number of companies, although a relatively small number, he was sort of the only game in town. And he said, if I'm the only game in town, then I'm going to charge as much as I want. And they were charging, what, up to $600 for an EpiPen?
Yep.
Yep. And is that outrageous? Yeah. It also makes me wonder, in a marketplace, why EpiPens, I don't think, have, I mean, there's nothing that would prevent other people from going in and making another EpiPen to address anaphylactic shock with either that product or some other product. Why aren't there more competitors in that business?
I'm not sure as to the reason why, but there are a few more competitors now, to, and they've managed to trim that down some. Hopefully that'll happen with insulin and the feds leave it alone.
I want them to leave it alone as well, because have you ever seen anything that got better or cheaper because the government got involved?
Scariest words you can hear. I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Ronald Reagan at his best. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Gary in Bremerton. Gary, thanks for listening. It's First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. Since I watched Biden in his speech there, more or less including the big pharma, well, we're going to beat the hell out of you, he said, I think pharma should publish some kind of news release that with three bullet points. We're going to cut back to one or two drugs produced a year instead of the hundreds in the pipeline, you know, at 10 years, $1 to $2 billion each. And instead, we're also going to allow the regular third world countries to do the regular stuff. So they, regular drugs already created, so they don't have to run and get some knockoffs. And lastly, they should announce they're going to build the largest porcelain factory in the world, so they can have an affordable burial urns for anyone that would want them with their choice of burial spots. And it was reassuring to everyone that Joe reminded us that he was a capitalist. I think they should put something like that out.
Do you think that Kamala Harris is a capitalist or a communist? That may have to be Monday's expo.
Oh, no doubt. She's a communist. But they just don't understand capitalism. They have no faith in it. Even though he's had decades and centuries of communism and dictators and what happens. You know, there's an ocean of corpses to prove that.
Yeah, but 100 million, I think, at last count, victims of communism worldwide. Might be bigger than that, but 100 million is plenty to prove that it's a bad idea. And if you look at what communism has done to Cuba or Venezuela, and every time you ask a liberal about communism, they say, oh, Sweden. Sweden is not a communist country. It's a very capitalist country, hugely capitalist country with a big welfare state, but they're not communist. And when Kamala Harris says, says, we are going to take control of wages, or not wages yet, but probably one day, but we're going to control prices in America. Anybody who's looked at any history, and I suspect she has not, knows that that is a terrible and, as you point out, often deadly idea. It's First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson. To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
I'm your lying dog face pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday. All subjects are fair game. Naysayers go to the head of the line. I want to tell you about, I've got to give you an update on something that just happened, so I'll let you know about it. J.D. Vance is fine. His airplane, a Boeing, of course, had to make an emergency landing at Milwaukee International Airport. They had, see if this sounds familiar, a bad door seal, and apparently they resolved the problem and put the plane back on its way to Cincinnati. But Boeing has not had a good decade, to say the least. We've still got astronauts stuck in space, and they're going to be there till 2025 because of a malfunctioning Boeing. We've had malfunctioning Boeings blow a door at 16,000 feet. Now we've had one malfunction on a vice presidential candidate. J.D. Vance is okay. He's back on his way on his Boeing, although kind of makes you wonder if Donald Trump might be tempted to go to a different brand of aircraft. In any case, one of the most common things I hear about in this show, since everything is political these days, energy, food, housing, everything's political, it all has a tie into politics, is people who are frustrated with the two-party system. Now, there are a lot of other parties in America, but the two that dominate American politics are, of course, the Republican Party and the party of slavery since 1829, the Democrat Party. And Stephen Verrier has written a number of best-selling books, but his most recent one is about that very thing. So I wanted to talk to him about it. The two-party trap recipe for dysfunction in American politics. It's author Stephen Verrier who joins me now. Stephen, welcome.
Thanks, Lars. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And every time somebody says, we should have 3 or 4 or 10 or 12 different parties, I say, no, you don't. Take a look at Israel. Doesn't work very well there. I don't think it'd work well here. Are we stuck in a two-party system, and it would be better to have some way of changing from that? And just to advance the question, how would you do it?
Well, the last part is the most difficult. I'll say that for a moment later. But yeah, it looks as though we are quite stuck under current conditions. I mean, it's not just a recent situation, but you know, all the way back to George Washington's first administration, the Federalists, the Anti-Federalists, you know, we've been stuck in this two-party rut, you could say. I am not a fan of parties in general. I mean, I go along with Washington, who said in his farewell address that, you know, there's a great danger in forming political parties, and that, you know, over time these parties can substitute their will for the will of the people. I think that very much has taken place. I mean, since those days, you know, we've always had a two-party system, whether those two or the Democratic Republicans who morphed into the Democratic Party over a long period of time, and since 1854, the Republicans. I mean, in some form, we've always had a two-party system. I think Americans just accept that now as a fact of life, and as is often reported, people just tend to vote along the lines of which they think is the lesser of two evils. As far as a solution is concerned, many books that cover this area, such as mine did, they make suggestions, but it's almost humorous if you read those books after the fact. I mean, none of the suggestions work. So I come to the conclusion that, you know, there's no easy fix. The only thing that's going to work, and it's going to take time and it's going to be painful, is for Americans to vote their consciences. even if you have a feeling your vote's not going to matter. I mean, when I vote often, since I'm not a supporter of the major parties, I often leave half my ballot blank. I don't want to do that, but, you know, morally often I feel compelled to do that. So I think if Americans look at the longer term and do what they think is right, that ultimately is the only solution.
I guess I wonder, even if we got rid of the parties altogether somehow, I mean, even in a country with the First Amendment, I don't think you can get rid of them, because I have the right to say, well, I'm going to form a group and it represents these kinds of things, and you have a group that represents those kinds of things. Aren't people always naturally going to say, I mean, if you had no parties at all and you said, who are you going to vote for governor or senator? And say, well, I'm going to vote for the low tax guy. And your friend says, well, I'm going to vote for the other guy, he or gal. She's for providing all the things that we need in society. And you say, oh, you mean the high tax person. And it always, doesn't it always kind of devolve down to that? I'm the one for a strong military defense. No, I want to spend more on human needs. Okay, you're with the human needs group. You're with the strong defense group. Doesn't it devolve down to, you have to make choices. And to make choices, you have to sort of define the candidates. Well, what is this candidate all about? Well, he wants low taxes, less regulation, and drill, baby, drill. And then you say, well, what does the other one represent? Well, she's promising everything you could ever want and a chicken in every pot. Oh, okay. Because even without the party labels, candidates would fall into, I'm for all of these things, and that guy is for all of those things, right?
Yeah, I largely agree with that. I'm not as opposed to parties as Washington was. I mean, I'm skeptical that certainly having a wider selection of parties is preferable to having two major parties. I mean, the two major parties now, you know, they write the rule book.
Look
at the Federal Election Commission or the Commission on Presidential Debates, I mean, they are controlled by the major parties. They're bent on excluding everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So in principle, I'm not opposed to political parties at all. But, you know, once they reach a certain stage and, you know, feel entitled to write the rules, you know, it is, a matter of grave concern in this nation.
I almost think you're going to probably need to write an addendum to this book, a new chapter described what happened this year, where we had a candidate in Joe Biden where in 2020, three of his opponents just mysteriously disappeared after winning primaries and then just dropped out of the race, and Joe was the guy. And the election before that, they kicked Bernie to the curb, and it was pretty clearly the Democrat Party that decided, we're not running the communist from Vermont, we're going to run Hillary, and they engineered it for her. And then they engineered it for Joe. And this year, you had members of a party go to Joe and say, either drop out of the race or we're going to drag you out of here using the 25th Amendment. Oh, and by the way, we're going to choose somebody to replace you as our candidate without consulting with the voters at all. I mean, now it's reached a new fever pitch, at least with one of the parties.
Oh, I agree completely. You know, this country was once a proud experiment in democracy. Something has gone off the rails for sure. I mean,
well,
and, you know, the coronation of Ms. Harris is a good case in point. I mean, it's a mess.
It is a mess, and yet the party made the mess. They could have said, let's show up at the convention in Chicago. We'll have a good time. We'll pick a candidate. They chose not to do that. They could have said, we'll consult with the people's representatives, our delegates. They said, we're not going to do that. We're going to engineer the outcome. His book is called The Two-Party Trap Recipe for Dysfunction in American Politics. Stephen Verrier, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. I know we're going to talk to him again. It's a great pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. With Epcom.
Email talk at LarsLarson.com. He actually reads them. More with Lars right now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. What are we about? Day 26 of Kamala Harris not talking to reporters, not answering questions. She had a big announcement today, although you ought to take a look at the pictures. In fact, I'll see if we can get them posted on our website, because when you see her on camera, you see this presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, with a huge crowd of people behind her, and it looks amazing. And then you see some of the pictures people took from the back of the room. They did it like staging one of those mass crowd scenes in a movie. You have a few people positioned right behind Kamala Harris, and the rest of the room literally is either empty or filled with media. It is a very staged scene. But if you're okay with staged candidates, then I guess you're okay with Kamala. Let's go to your calls, since it's a First Amendment Friday, with one reminder, and that is vote in our X poll. Today's question: should police use drones as first responders, not only responders, but first responders, to get eyes on the scene faster? They're doing it in Redmond, Washington. I think it's a good idea. Now, if you're sending the police cars, they're going to arrive a lot slower. You send the drone, it gets above the scene. Maybe you can track the suspects. Maybe you can size up the situation and decide if you need even more cops or maybe an ambulance or two. I think it's a great idea. You'll find the X poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Let's go first to Larry. Hey, Larry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Larry, got a, I mean,
sorry. I'll be Larry today. You be Lars and I'll be Larry. I don't care.
Okay. Hey, I got a question for you.
Sure.
There's a lot of people that are on fixed incomes.
Yep.
That use insulin.
Yep.
And I don't understand why they don't use or try to apply for the patient's assistance program that the drug companies offer.
I don't know why. And in fact, Larry, I'll tell you this. Even during the Trump solution on the insulin, which was working, but only about half of the providers decided to apply for it and say, we'll go along with that program. So then when Biden came in, he wiped it out and created his own solution. I don't understand half of those things, Larry, because I guess you'd have to go out and talk to those people individually and say, this stuff's expensive. Why don't you apply for a program where you could get it less expensively? Larry, it's the same reason why I wonder why.
It wouldn't cost them a thing if they applied if they're on a fixed income.
Yep.
Anyway,
and by the way,
the other thing I wanted to ask
second question.
Is you have an incredible show.
Thank you.
Who do you have someone on your team that selects the music, or is it pre-selected when the call is on hold?
It's kind of a group effort, because there are times I'll say, I hate that music. Can we get rid of it? And I'll suggest songs. Donovan does. Joel hasn't recently. Mackenzie does all the time. So I've got three great producers. So with, you know, all three brains put together, we got six times the brains of Kamala Harris.
Well, a lot of times when I'm hold, there have been times I've been hold for an hour and I just enjoyed the music so much. I wish I could have recorded it.
Well, I thank you for
anyway,
that.
You've got a great show. I appreciate
you.
What you do. And keep it up.
That's very kind of you. Thank you, Larry. Let's go to Joseph. Hey, Joseph, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hello, Lars. I recently called when I was 18, I believe, and you told me I was pretty knowledgeable of what was going on politically. I just have a question about the housing market currently.
Let's do that, then. What is it?
I watched on a recent, like, I think it was Patrick Bet David podcast.
I don't know where you're going with this, Joseph. What's your question about the housing market?
So, Patrick Bet David said that Larry Fink was basically the, you know, acting as the president of the United States, being the president of BlackRock. And I'm worried I just turned 30. Buying a house in like today's market and everything like that. I mean, they're saying like you have to, I don't know, like have way more than like, it seems like $400,000 to even be in a single family home. And what I'm hearing is that BlackRock is buying up all the family homes. So my question, because I voted for Trump in his first election.
Can I give you some real information, Joseph? Because there's lots of conspiracy theories out there. I happen to know the numbers on this one. BlackRock is a big investment company. They own less than 5% of the rentals in America, and they own less than 1% of the single-family homes. So does that sound like a big, scary corporate presence in housing?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know where you're getting those numbers. I'm just going off of what this guy has said, and he's on the Rogan podcast, and he was really
yeah, I got to tell you something. I have great respect for Joe Rogan, not so much for his guests. But, you know, if your question is, how come housing's so expensive? Joseph,
why would Trump have Larry Fink as his, I think it's like,
He had him as one of his advisors.
Like
I can't remember the position he held, but the fact is, why would he? He's a guy who knows a lot about finance, and he has a lot of people on his team that I trust, and he has some people on his team I don't trust, and I don't know who his new team will be, but what does that have to do with housing?
Because that's what I'm saying. Because I've heard that Larry Fink with BlackRock is being one of the biggest proponents of why the housing market is like
no.
Why
Joseph, I was
like,
trying to tell you, why is housing expensive, whether buying it or renting it? The basic rule is if you have a lot of something, it tends to be cheap. If you have not very much of something, it's expensive. That's supply and demand. Right now, we don't build nearly enough houses in America, nor apartments or anything else. And if you say, well, why don't they? Well, right now, it's because of the cost of money, which was driven up by the Biden administration to where mortgage rates are almost triple what they were when Joe Biden walked in. They were 2.65. They are now about 6.5. So they're well over half. Almost, you know, half the way to three times as expensive. So borrowing money is expensive. It's expensive to build housing. What else is true? Materials are expensive. Labor is expensive. And every time inflation pushes things up, labor gets more expensive because all the workers say, I can't afford groceries, boss. I need a raise. And so all of those things are pushing things up. But the biggest factor, I think, and you check if you don't believe me, today, Kamala Harris came out and said, we need to build 3 million houses a year. Okay. Well, we're building 1.5 million houses a year. You say, so you want to double that. None of that happens because the king or the queen or the president says it happens. It happens when it makes sense. Now, when the government comes in and says, we're going to have higher taxes, more regulations, and we're going to have all these regulations on building housing, both at the federal level and at the state level. When you make it hard for people to build houses, Joseph, do you think they build more houses when you make it hard to build houses?
Oh, no. No, for sure.
Okay,
hold on.
Here's your answer, though. When Trump comes in, he wants to lower taxes. He wants to lessen government regulation. And if the states would do this, I'll tell you two places. Housing is abundant and prices have actually come down in Texas. Do you know what the state did?
I'm looking at them.
And that's because the state of Texas said, we want more housing, so let's make it easier for builders to build housing. They did so. They've had a boom in housing, in house building, both apartments and houses. And now they've got more houses and prices not only haven't gone up, they've actually gone down a bit. And in the real estate trade, I'm not in it, but if you say, if I wanted to bring housing costs down, what should I do? You say, well, they brought the difficulty of housing down in Texas, and they got more of it, and the price went down. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. On the left coast. Get it? Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. Now, artificial intelligence is scary for a number of reasons. We can imagine good uses of it, but I could also easily imagine a lot of nefarious uses of artificial intelligence. But how about this concern? Is artificial intelligence actually putting the electric grid in America at risk? I thought we'd talk about that with Josh Smith, who's energy policy lead at the Abundance Institute. Josh, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lars. Happy to be here.
I want you to, you know, outline this or put this in context for my audience. How big a power consumer is AI now, and how much is it going to grow in the next couple of years?
That's a perfect question, because this is exactly what people should keep in mind. Today, data centers use about 2% of worldwide electricity. The forecast is that over the next 10 years, the next 5 years, depending on which ones you look at, that could double from about 2% to about 4%. So it's a big energy user, and that's exciting because it's going to mean we're going to find new ways to use this technology. It's going to make all of our lives better. And I agree, we've got to find ways to power this new technology.
We do, because here's the concern I've got. I understand that any country that becomes a leader in AI could be a good country, like I think my country is for all its faults, or a bad actor like China. I view China as a bad actor. And then there are other countries that are even worse, like North Korea and Iran and others, who might use AI for all kinds of nasty purposes if they chose to. And given the fact that some of those countries specialize in hacking and have been doing a lot of it lately, apply AI to hacking and you've got a much bigger problem. So it has some good use. I've talked to medical people about how AI can be used to spot cancer earlier, come up with treatments we would have taken a decade to get to, but we're getting to it faster with AI. How do we make sure that this massive consumer of energy, even if it only consumed 4% of worldwide electricity, that's an awful lot of power, and what's coming out of it? Because, Josh, the first thing I think of is the data centers I've seen with my own eyes, you know, Facebook, Twitter, or Meta. And these are these giant energy sucks. And you say, but they're so valuable. I said, what? So I can see pictures of your lunch posted on your Twitter account or what?
I love that question. It's important that we use this energy well, right? You want to use it for things that matter. But here the real question is, we don't want to pull a President Biden on AI and get really concerned over science fiction stories. I don't know if you saw this news story. Your listeners might love it in particular, but apparently at Camp David, President Biden was watching a recent Mission Impossible movie, you know, one of these action movies with Tom Cruise running around, and that's when he got concerned about AI. That, at our Abundance Institute, that's exactly the wrong footing to get off on a new technology. We want to approach this like we would anything else, right? This is a technology. That means it's going to have good things. It's going to have bad things. That's just the way technology works, right? Like, the car is a great way to get around. It also has emissions that we should figure out how to deal with and lower and clean up the environment. And that's really the success story that we want to tell. Like, cars weren't a perfect solution to every problem, but they sure cleaned up the horse poop that was all over streets before we had cars, right? So that's the story of technological progress. And yeah, there's always going to be silly nonsense that you see of people just posting their photos from lunch, but technology is much more than just those silly uses. It's an everyday thing that makes our lives better.
No, I agree with you about that. It's just that when you put the technology out there, you don't know and really can't control. And by the way, I'm not in favor of having the government control more than it absolutely has to. And by that, I mean, if the U.S. government says we're going to clamp down on AI technology in such a way that effectively America will follow the rest of the world and they'll get to the technology sooner, I don't want that result either. So how do you split the difference and say, we're going to have AI, we're going to be an AI leader because America has been a technology leader. We're not going to let the other countries, especially the bad ones, get ahead of us. But on the other hand, we've got to have some controls. How much is the right amount?
Yeah, that's a great question. And Neil Chilson is one of the, he's our head of AI policy at the Abundance Institute. He's the right person to ask that question. But in concrete terms, from the energy point of view, what we have to do is clean up the bad regulations and red tape that prevent data centers from being developed and powered. A couple weeks ago, I talked with some legislative staff here in Utah about data centers in building in Utah. And the reason that the legislators coming to me and asking these questions is because the companies ask the local utility and say, can you build this? And they will say no. Overwhelmingly, they've been told no. And so we have outdated rules and regulations holding back the entrepreneurs that want to make sure the U.S. is the first to develop the best AI technologies.
Well, let me, Josh, back on that a bit, because we've got a point in America where the Greens on the left have said, look, we're going to shut down all the coal plants. And when somebody says, well, we currently generate, I think it's still 40% of our electricity with coal. If you shut them down, where are you going to get the 40%? So you've got that going on. They're reducing the supply of electricity without an obvious replacement for it. And then you got the forces saying we have to electrify everything. We don't want anybody using natural gas. So use it for your home, use it for water, use it for all those other cooking and every other purpose. Stop using the abundant natural gas we've got. So there's more demand on the grid. There's less supply in the grid. And then along comes AI saying, hey, we want a big chunk so that we can generate whatever is being generated out of AI, whether it's brilliant medical technology or things that make Kamala Harris sound like a Republican by doing, you know, by using AI to create something that looks and sounds like Kamala Harris, but she actually sounds like a reasonable person.
I love that question, too. This is an important thing for us to tackle because energy is fundamental, right? Prosperity is energy intensive, and so we want to make sure our energy policy allows people to build new things. And what I want listeners like yours to hear and think about when they talk about different kinds of energy is to think about it like a dollar. It doesn't matter if that dollar is the coin dollar or a paper bill. It all spends the same in the system. And so, yes, we've got to build some more generation to power these systems. I think that's going to happen. It's happening in particular in places like Texas. If you go and look, they have over 147 gigawatts of just new batteries that they want to add to the grid. They have another 18 gigawatts or so of natural gas. We are building some of these things. Renewable advocates, too, I agree. They've got to wake up to just how great natural gas is at pushing up coal on a market
basis.
But
Josh, are you seeing any indication? Because we have this gigantic trillions of cubic feet of natural gas. It's one of the cleanest fuels around. And every green group I see says, no, natural gas is a fossil fuel. It's finite. I don't think it is. And by the way, it still puts CO2 in the air. So no natural gas.
It is true. This is one of the things that, look, reality doesn't play games nicely. It doesn't punch with gloves. It hits with a hard fist. And this is a reality people are going to have to wake up to, that sometimes the wind doesn't blow. Sometimes the sun doesn't shine. You need gas as a backup. And the good news is there that even though the green groups are loud, right, especially online, in practical terms, if you look at the data, there's almost a one-to-one comparison of adding a renewable energy unit to the grid and adding a new natural gas unit to the grid to kind of back up. And the thing there is, I don't want you to think about them as enemies. They compete, but there are companies that actually have both of these assets. You have a wind farm and you have a gas farm, and you're running the gas where the wind's not blowing.
See, Josh, I agree with you on that, but I happen to live in a state, Washington State, where they've said no new use of natural gas. And right next door is Oregon that has actually made it illegal to build electric generation using natural gas. It is illegal, and you can't even expand the plants you've got. So there may be some reasonable places like relatively conservative Utah, but there are some blue places in America, and they tend to have good, better or bigger populations that are saying, nope, no gas at all. But I'm just concerned that of our energy budget, when we start to spend not 2%, but 4 or 5% on AI, I wonder what gets cut. Josh, thanks very much. That's Josh Smith, the energy policy lead at the Abundance Institute. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. August.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google. Yeah, he's everywhere. The Lars Larson Podcast.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment of the show on a First Amendment Friday brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our X-Poll question today, should police use drones as first responders to get eyes on the scene faster? I'd say yes, and if you wonder where it's happening, Redmond, Washington, right outside of Seattle, using drones to respond to 911 calls. They also send a police car and, you know, police officers as well. But to get the drone there faster so you can get eyes on the scene, well, there are technology companies that are doing it. So I know people worry about Big Brother, but if somebody calls 911 for help and you can get eyes on the scene faster, track the bad guy as he or she runs away, I think that's a positive. Find the X-Poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Before I go to your calls, I've got to mention this. And I'll give full credit to Oregon Live, what I usually call the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper. But this story about Amira Andrade, who is 29 years old, she was working at an Oregon youth prison. She was under investigation for having sex multiple times with a teenager locked up at the McLaren Youth Correctional Facility in 2020 and 2021. So they let her go, and she left while she was under investigation. Where did she turn up next? She turned up at the state's Division of Human Services, working in the Child Welfare Division, and her paycheck actually got bigger. And apparently the department officials were asked, did you know that she resigned from the Oregon Youth Authority while she was under investigation for bringing contraband into the youth prison and possibly having sex with one of the teenagers locked up there? And now all they would say is, we are currently reviewing all hiring documents. In other words, they didn't have a clue that they had just hired somebody who had just left under a cloud at another agency. Now, if she's not guilty of the thing she was being investigated for, so be it. On that note, let's go to Abby. Hey, Abby, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind today?
Hi, good afternoon, Lars. I enjoy your show quite a bit.
Thank you, ma'am.
I just wanted to talk about the rent issue.
Yeah, Kamala Harris wants to have the government control rent from Washington, D.C. Is that a good idea?
Absolutely not. I don't think it is, because as a renter, my rent was able to go up every 6 months because that's what they were allowed to do. Whether the people could afford it or not, they still raised it between $50 and $100.
Yeah.
Now, our paychecks obviously don't increase that much, and when you're in on a fixed income, it makes it very difficult when you rent an apartment at $490, a one bedroom apartment.
Wow.
And then by the time you leave in 8 years, it's almost $900.
Yeah.
And they've done absolutely zero improvements.
Abby, can I ask you this? So you do want to have the government control the amount that rent can increase by?
That's a tough one.
Well,
because they could make up whatever amount they wanted, because we know the government isn't exactly consumer-minded of
no
what
kidding.
People can actually afford.
Well, let me ask you this. What if they capped the rent increase at 5%? I'm not in favor of it. How many improvements do you think your landlord's likely to make if his property taxes nationwide on rentals went up about 5% last year? You have energy costs are up, repair costs are up, all these costs are up. Your landlord's seen 6, 7, 8% increase in his costs, but he's only allowed to collect 5% more. Do you think he's likely to improve your apartment at all?
Oh, not at all.
No.
As it was 5 years ago where I was living, I had my bathroom ceiling caved in.
Yep.
And they just patched it. They did not fix it. They didn't get rid of the mold. They just patched it.
And that's because they couldn't collect back what it was going to cost. Abby, thanks for the call and thanks for the compliment. Let's go to naysayer John. John, we have almost 2 minutes. Let's get right to where we disagree. What is it?
Well, I think you need to prepare for the inevitable of Kamala Harris winning, and I was wondering what kind of adjustments maybe you're planning on making. Are you going to, like, sell all your guns?
Well, I'm going to threaten to leave the country. No, I'm not going to do any of that. I believe in America, and there is no better place.
Have you talked to your producers about you're going to change your show?
I'm not going to change my show one little bit. Why would I?
Well, we're going to be moving into a Soviet-style system under Kamala, and
I'll end up in a gulag. Will Kamala send me to the gulag?
Well, it depends on what you say. You know, not everybody suffered the worst under the Soviet system when it came in.
Some of them made a lot of money. Some of them became very privileged. Tovarish meant
you
were one of the high Soviet command.
Are you prepared to compromise yourself to go stay on the air?
Nope. Never will.
You could get pretty bad for people with your position then, wouldn't
you? I'm not sure that we disagree about anything, John. What do we disagree about? I think Trump's going to win. I think Kamala Harris is going to get a look from the American public, and they're going to say, this woman couldn't think her way out of a wet paper bag.
Well, I'm thinking she might win, and I want to make sure at least I can have enough food when price controls hit.
Yeah, price controls. What a great idea. Everything is $2. There's nothing for sale, but everything, if it were for sale, would be $2. That's the Soviet system. Soviet Kamala. Toverish Kamala.
The Lars Larson Show. To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I love First Amendment Friday, but one of the promises I made a long time ago is that I always disclose if I have a dog in the fight. And I may have a dog in the fight. I bought my first house in 1980, and it was tough. I spent about half my take-home pay on the house payment. Literally, half the pay. It was $600 a month, which sounds not even like rent these days. But the question is, do millennials have it even worse in today's housing market than the statistics show boomers did when trying to buy a house themselves in the 80s like I did? So if I'm biased in that way, and so be it. At least I've disclosed that. Now, Pete Sepp joins me now, president of the National Taxpayers Union. Pete, welcome back to the program.
Always great to be here.
I guess I'm glad to hear that millennials actually want to buy houses, because by all accounts, they want to live up to that WEF motto, you will own nothing and you will be happy. Am I wrong about that? Are there millennials who actually aspire to own the American dream?
Yeah, they are increasingly gravitating toward home ownership. And the problem is, no generation is more ill-prepared or ill-served by their government to own a home. And that's the problem here. You know, Kamala Harris has released her economic agenda with a lot of affordable housing policies in there, trying to get 3 million homes built, a $40 billion federal fund to assist homeowners and home builders. A kernel of one good idea in there, which is to free up more federal lands for housing construction. Boy, that's a smart idea, but the rest of it isn't focusing on the real problem, which is government standing in the way of home ownership. You look at closing costs, for example. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is investigating why closing costs have increased. And we filed comments with them noting that 44% of the average closing cost is taxes. Maybe they ought to start there rather than complaining that loan providers are somehow gouging people.
Well, in fact, wouldn't that be a cleaner way than what Harris proposed today, which is she says, I'm going to offer $25,000 in down payment assistance for new home buyers. Now, you might hear that number and think that's a lot of money. And then you look at what the average cost of a home is in America. And this is across the board, not on the coast lines, is $410,000. And you say, well, 10% of that is $41,000. 25 grand gets you a little over halfway there. It certainly doesn't close the deal. And that's assuming the bank doesn't say, no, with your credit, you're going to need 20% down, so you're going to need $80,000. 25 grand isn't going to do anything but probably drive the price up.
Yeah, that's right. And when you take a look at the total problem, the National Association of Home Builders has a good statistic that about one quarter of the median priced home is priced that way because of taxes, regulations, building permits, all the import taxes on their building materials. Maybe Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, I think, should start there and say, we're going to lift those burdens, not only on the homeowners, but the home builders, and lo and behold, you might get more housing supply without another federal intervention spending other people's money.
Exactly, and I totally agree with you on that. I'm talking to Pete Sepp from the National Taxpayers Union. Now, the bit about freeing up more federal land for housing, I would agree with you in principle, but tell me this. Where does the federal government mostly own land? Because it's not in the cities, is it? Isn't it mostly in forests and mountain ranges? I mean, we're not building houses at Yellowstone. So when they talk about freeing up federal land, what land is she talking about?
Yeah, the devil will be in the details. And the federal government owns a huge amount of Nevada, for example.
Oh, I was just thinking of that, Pete.
That's all desert. That's all desert.
You can build a house out in the desert anywhere you want. Now, good luck with the roads and the utilities.
Yeah. Now, where it might make sense is the massive federal office building footprint. There are so many unoccupied federal offices around the country. They don't even have a good inventory of the number of buildings they own. Those are in urban areas, everything from post offices to warehouses that no longer have anything in them. Why not get rid of those and say to developers, you want to put an apartment building here? You are welcome to do so.
And by the way, mortgage rates, I keep pointing out to my audience because I think it's a good measure of where we've ended up. Everybody focuses on gasoline and the cost of a loaf of bread, which, by the way, Pete, I just saw the shortest campaign commercial in history. The Trump campaign put it out. It's Kamala Harris at today's announcement saying the price of bread is up 50%. The price of ground beef is up 50%. And it stops at that point. You hear, I'm Donald Trump and I approve this message. And it's like she is her own worst enemy. She comes out and says, most people can barely pay for the necessities. And at the end of the month, there's no money left. But we have a fantastic economy. It's going great. And I don't understand how she's going to sell both of those messages simultaneously.
Yeah, it's not possible for her to run away from this record, a record that she was touting along with President Biden barely a week ago. And my colleague Debbie Jennings actually has an excellent blog on this point that Harris made today about food prices being too high and price gouging on the part of grocery stores being the problem. No, it's not that. It's everything from energy costs that have gone up because of the Biden administration's policies. It costs more to transport food. How about the fact that we have had, of course, the war in Ukraine affecting prices, but what about all of the taxes on farmers? What about all of the flawed subsidy programs? What about all of the environmental programs that prevent farmers from utilizing the land they own more productively for actual production and farming?
Not to mention the fact that when oil prices went up dramatically under this president who vowed to put the oil companies out of business, whether people realize it or not, the dinner they sit down to tonight is made from oil. The fertilizer is a petrochemical product. The fuel for the tractor to plant it, to harvest it, to transport it to market is all diesel. And somehow they say, oh, no, we could have oil prices go from $40 to $80, but it won't touch food at all. Yes, it will. And yes, it has. And yet her solution to that is to go out and take the evil grocery companies. I just looked up their number today. 1.6% is the profit margin at the average grocery across America. So if you spend $1,000 in a grocery, the evil grocery store owner made $16. Come on. It is not price gouging. And I guess what Kamala Harris wants is a Soviet style system. I'll give you the last 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And she sends the FTC after Kroger and Albertsons for wanting to merge and actually compete with online and the big box outlets. It's all contradictory policy. It's got to end. And I'd urge folks to visit our site at ntu.org to learn a little more.
That's the National Taxpayers Union, ntu.org, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Well, we're in the...
murky political climate. He's the steamroller. This is the Lars Larson Show.
It has to be about a goal of saying everybody should end up in the same place. And since we didn't start in the same place, some folks might need more. Equitable distribution.
That is Kamala Harris, not today, but it should tell you a lot about why she announced what she announced today. I've described it as a Soviet-style command and control kind of situation where the government decides everything. They decide the maximum price of rent, the maximum price of groceries, the maximum price of gasoline. And if you say, boy, that'd be great if they just said, well, gasoline can't cost any more than $2.50 a gallon, the government says so. Do you know how much gasoline is going to be for sale tomorrow if the government set the price? Zero. No gallons of gasoline would be available at $2.50 a gallon. Why? Because it costs more than that to produce it and put it in the pump where you get it. And the Soviet Union was a great example of that. Cuba was another, Venezuela more recently. And yet this is what Kamala Harris has in mind. And why? Because I want to play that bite again, because I want you to hear what she says. She says it has to be about equitable distribution. Everybody has to end up the same.
It has to be about a goal of saying everybody should end up in the same place. And since we didn't start in the same place, some folks might need more. Equitable distribution.
Now, did you hear there are two different things going on there? Number one, you're running a foot race. Is somebody going to win? Yes. Is somebody going to lose? Yes, in every single race, if you say, I'm going to swim faster, I'm going to run faster, I'm going to jump higher, somebody wins, somebody loses. In Kamala Harris's ideal world, there are no losers. Everybody is a winner, but nobody's a big winner, because nobody can be a big winner more than somebody else. Now, if that reminds you of Kurt Vonnegut's story, Harrison Bergeron, with the handicapper general, where nobody can be prettier, nobody can sing better, nobody can dance better, that everybody is limited by a federal government official called the handicapper general, who decrees that if you are a great dancer, a great ballerina, that they have to hang weights on your arms so you can't be any better than anyone else. This is Kamala Harris, and that is communism to a T. It's First Amendment Friday. Glad to get your calls. I got a few other things to say about Kamala Harris and about her plans announced today for $1.7 trillion in giveaways. And if you wonder, where are those giveaways coming from? They're coming from either your taxes or borrowed money or a combination of both of them. And they are colossally stupid. They ignore ordinary economics, because Kamala Harris wants to say the last 3.5 years, which she has bragged about as being Bidenomics, and she bought into it 100%, it has produced, as she said today, a loaf of bread 50% more than it used to cost when Joe Biden came in. A pound of ground round is 50% more. Gasoline is 40% more. Mortgage rates more than double. And yet she wants to say none of that has anything to do with the government and what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris did. It all has to do with corporate greed. If you believe that, I suggest you take Econ 101. 866, hey Lars, is the number to call. And if you're a naysayer, I'll put you first at 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Bob's on the line. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Lars? Well, I just wanted to talk to you a minute about the election coming up, okay?
Sure.
I am
absolutely
a, honest to God, 100% devout MAGA guy, and I'm going to vote for Trump. But I also know that the Democrats are going to do something, I don't know what, to try to win this election. But my idea, or what I really think, is it's not going to make any difference who wins the election, because one way or the other, especially on the Democrat side, you're going to have people in the streets rioting and burning down cities, and we're going to have to stop them.
I agree with you. And by the way, Bob, have you seen any crowds of MAGA types? Because I identify as Make America Great Again as well. Have you seen any MAGA types out there burning things down or rioting?
Oh, no. We've had several demonstrations over here in Bend over the past year. where we're supporting the MAGA idea, and we go out and wave flags and stuff, and all we get is a bunch of one-fingered salutes.
Of course you do. And on the other side of the aisle, the Antifa and BLM, have you seen them riot and burn things down and sometimes murder people?
All over the world, all over the United States of America. You see it on the news, but they don't ever tell the truth. The only people who tell the truth are on Fox.
Well, and I appreciate that. And sadly, Fox has gotten a little bit on the liberal side, too. But, Bob, thanks for the call. Let's go to Ron in Tacoma. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
You were talking to a gentleman earlier, and he was asking you about why people aren't taking advantage of, like, this health care, you know, programs and stuff. And I caught into a show the other day that they were covering that issue.
Yeah.
And I was pretty aghast. I didn't catch it all, but basically after listening to it, apparently a lot of those things are scams. Just another damn scam the Democrats have put together. Say that you're going to get something when you're really not. Kind of like, I don't know, you probably heard about this the other day. The Harris administration, you know, they turn and Biden, they turn around and they destroyed the Medicare, 33 million seniors for the
Medicare Advantage. They're destroying that because Medicare Advantage is run by the private sector. It's in cooperation with Medicare, but it runs much more efficiently, costs less to provide, and was hugely popular. So if you're the Biden-Harris administration, you don't want that because people say, well, I don't want to be in Medicare. I want to be in Medicare Advantage, the private version, because it's cheaper.
Yeah, and so I heard the other day they were saying that the insurance companies and people involved in that, they were going to be pumping out letters to the senior citizens in September, and they didn't want that to come out. So apparently now, this was on Fox News, that Biden and Harris administration are using taxpayers' money to mask.
No, and by the way, Ron, I mentioned that on the show specifically yesterday. We actually had a guest on, and I made the point to him that what they've done is the insurance companies started to squawk and say, the thing you've done with Medicare Part D in particular is costing us a whole bunch of money, so we're going to have to send out letters in September that tell people next year your premiums will be going up. And the Biden and Harris said, we can't have that. So they stole money from Medicare and sent it to the insurance company saying, quiet down. Don't announce the price increases till next year. Here's the buy off. And they bought them off. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks. I guess a couple of things. I guess the frustration that I have is that no one has seen or really looked at the economics of the government. I mean, I've got an MBA from the University of Portland, and I've been around a while. And at the end of the day, there's no market forces that are involved in the government. So in essence, everything costs twice as much, takes twice as long.
Yep.
The government is not good at doing anything.
Nope.
The only thing that should happen is to set policy and get the hell out of the way.
I agree with you. And Jeff, the first policy they should set is anything you can get from the Yellow Pages should not be provided by the government. And if you started that way, and every candidate for office for the last couple of decades, I've asked them, no matter what they're running for, city council, county commission, legislature, or Congress, the first question is, what is at least one thing the government you're running for is doing now that it should not be doing and get out of the business? And most of them, even Republicans, give me a blank stare. They don't have an idea, and they should have an idea.
The Lars Larson Show. Wise words from President Reagan.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us. We the people are the driver. The government is the car. And we decide where it should go.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And sometimes the policies are coming out of Washington, D.C. so fast, so thick and fast, that it's hard to even sort them out. Most of the time when I see a new policy announcement, I have a vague idea, at least sometimes a firm idea of what they're talking about. In this case, I have none. And so I'm going to turn to Larry Behrens, who's with Power of the Future. Larry, welcome to the program. And the headline from Reuters was, the United States, one of the world's biggest makers of plastic, will support a global treaty that has the force of law, calling for a reduction in how much new plastic is produced every year in a major policy shift. What the heck are they doing?
Lars, great to be with you. And you ask a fantastic question because I'm trying to wrap my mind around it as well. The best I can figure is this is like the Paris Climate Accords, but it's really the plastic accords. They're trying to get us under this treaty so that we will diminish plastic production in the United States just to, I don't know, please the people in China. And so when they're looking at undermining yet another American industry, plastic is part of it. And let's be clear, they're doing that because it involves petrochemicals, not because it has really anything to do with the environment. And so the best I can describe it is imagine the plastic ban, a plastic bag ban at your local store. Well, they're trying to take that nationwide and worldwide.
Well, and in fact, here's, I mean, if they're just doing this and the U.S. says we'll cut our plastics production, am I right in suspecting that production will still go on? It just won't go on here. It'll be in China and Malaysia and a bunch of other places around the world. And all we'll have done is shift the production and the jobs to some other country.
That's exactly right, Lars. It's just like, you know, when they went after coal, right? Has demand for coal gone down?
No.
Demand for coal has gone up. But it's just not taken out of the ground here in the United States now. It's done elsewhere where they can profit from it. The exact same thing will happen to plastic. And you got to realize, too, from the Biden-Harris perspective, this is perfect. These are the companies that don't donate to their campaign, so they don't get most favorable company treatment. And so it's, you know, if you're a friend of the Biden-Harris administration, you get fat tax subsidies. If you're not a friend, well, then you get regulated out of existence.
Well, and if all they do is shift the production elsewhere, Larry, I don't think I'm being jingoistic or ethnocentric if I say if plastic is made and it's made under America's laws and America's rules, it's made in a much more environmentally sensitive way than it would be somewhere outside of Beijing. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. I mean, take a look at any measurement that the radical environmental left says they care about, whether it's emissions, whether it's, you know, this type of pollution or that type of litter and plastic in the ocean. China is so far ahead of the United States, it's not even funny. So we do it cleaner and better here in the United States, but that has, you know, the downward effect of allowing fossil fuels to flourish here in our country. And so according to the left, that can't happen. They're more than happy to do it in China. And it has to, you know, I know I've been accused of the jingoistic argument as well. We have to start asking ourselves, how many policies are we going to pass that are beneficial to only China, that are detrimental to the United States, before someone starts asking the question, who's really funding these groups and these politicians pushing these policies? Because it's definitely not an America First perspective.
Well, and Larry, I think I have the answer. Now, I may go too far outside your lane when I say that I think the Biden crime family is 100% bought off by communist China. I mean, Hunter Biden, it's indisputable that Hunter Biden and the Biden crime family received tens of millions of dollars from communist China while Hunter was out peddling Joe Biden's influence as vice president. And now Joe Biden not only knows these guys paid me, but he also knows these guys could out me anytime they want. You know, so if Beijing said, hey, Joe's not being compliant anymore, he's not sending all the business to us anymore, so why don't we just let it leak what he and his son actually got out of China and why they got it? And at that point, you know, not only is Biden destroyed and Hunter is destroyed, but the Democrat Party gets destroyed, and Joe knows they could do it any time, doesn't he?
It's such a great point. I mean, if folks go back all the way back to 2016, when they thought Hillary was going to win, Hunter Biden, who has no foreign policy experience other than his dad is Joe Biden, was a consultant on a Chinese company buying a copper mine in Africa from an American company, right? And so Hunter cleaned out well over $1 million just for Wink consulting on that deal. So when you point out that China, communist China, absolutely has the literal receipts on the Biden crime family, you are right on the money.
And how tough would it be? I mean, if they figure we've already bought him, he's already sold half of the energy future of America to China. bit by saying we're not going to use coal or oil or natural gas. We're not going to use nuclear. We're going to tie our entire energy future to solar panels, windmills, and batteries, 80% of which are made in China. He's already tied us to the Chinese that way. Now, I'm hoping that Donald Trump can untie us starting in January. But if the Chinese figure, well, we spent $10 million, which for them is probably the paperclip budget for Beijing for a year, and they say, we've already got our money's worth, why don't we just throw him under the bus and throw America into chaos? They could do that in a heartbeat, and they lose exactly nothing.
It's such a play right out of the communist playbook, right? They schmooze you, compromise you, and then when you're no longer of use to them, they're going to burn you. And of course, that's what the Chinese are going to do. And lo and behold, it's the American taxpayer that's going to be left holding the bag, because we spent, I mean, today is the 2-year anniversary of Joe Biden signing the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yep.
And what that contained was $369 billion in money for sun panels and windmills. Where do you think that money went? So not only did they get a sweet deal with access through Hunter Biden, they got a president to sign them billions of dollars that is flowing directly to Beijing.
And by the way, do you think Joe is happy that he's no longer running for re-election? Because I get the impression he's not happy. They kind of let him out of the locked room for a moment to come out and, you know, get on the stage with Kamala. But I kind of wonder, yeah, on your way out the door, if you've been given your termination notice, but you haven't left the company yet, I kind of wonder, because yesterday he came out and said, and I want to make the point that there wasn't a single Republican who voted for this, not one. Now, he thinks that's a point, or it could be played as a point in Kamala's favor. I actually think it's a point in the favor of every single Republican and Donald Trump to say, yep, none of us voted for Obamacare and none of us voted for the Inflation Reduction Act. And it's been a disaster. And Kamala gets 100% of the credit because she cast the tie-breaking vote. If Joe thinks that's a plus for Kamala's campaign, then Joe's dumber than I think.
Well, and it was literally yesterday, because I watched that same press event, I'm sure as you did, and yep. My favorite part was at the end where Kamala literally walks Joe off stage left. It's like, your time's done. And they take separate exits off the stage. It's like, your point is exactly right. You're done here. Move along. And when we see all these things that Kamala talked about today about, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be my favorite was, I'm going to be laser focused. Well, does that mean because you haven't been able to care less when you were vice president? And so I think every time KGP takes the, you know, White House podium and says the Biden-Harris administration, the Harris campaign starts pulling their hair out, because they're like, we don't want to be tied to this guy. But the American people know a lot.
Do you know what I suspect, Larry? Just like Joe is a short timer. In fact, in broadcast, let me mention this. Well, I don't know if you know this. When you get fired in broadcast, I've never been fired, but my friends have been fired. They call you in and say, your last day was today and you're gone. They don't want you back on the air. I mean, I think if the Democrat Party thought they could get rid of Joe some way and have him go away right now, they'd make him go away right now. They just haven't figured out how. But I think that KJP knows that she's on short time too, and I don't think she thinks she's going to get a gig with the Kamala Harris administration, should there be one. I also think she may think in her heart of hearts it isn't likely anyway. Hey, Larry, thanks very much. That's Larry Behrens from the group Power of the Future. The U.S. has made a commitment to support a global treaty promising the rest of the world that America will cut its plastic production. We're just going to shift the jobs somewhere else. With home.
Just listen for 5 minutes. You'll feel better. More with Lars Larson right now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. Your phone calls and your emails are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our X poll today. Should police use drones as first responders to get eyes on the scene faster? My answer to that is yes. And I want to tell you where it's happening. Redmond, Washington, outside of Seattle. And I think it's a brilliant idea. In fact, I wish the police in more communities were doing it. But they've run into one of those stupid federal rules. And in this case, I understand the need for the rule. I understand the thinking behind the rule, but I don't think the FAA is thinking very much. What they say is that if you want to have the police fly a drone, so let's say they get a report of a robbery in progress, and if they can launch a drone quickly, apparently they launch them from the roof of the police station, and that drone gets out there fairly quickly. I mean, some of the drones, if you've seen them, they actually are very fast. I mean, they're going 50, 60 miles an hour. So imagine a fast drone with a camera that can go to a GPS point. So if you say, we know the intersection where this 7-Eleven is being robbed, and they fly the drone out there, point of sale, you know, as the crow flies straight to the location, and they're going 50, 60, even faster than that, and they get there, and they've got a camera on the scene, and they can direct responding police cars into that. They can say whoever, and they have a police officer operating the drone. And he can say, we've got three suspects. They're in the parking lot. They're getting in a gray Ford sedan, even maybe read the license plate numbers. The car is leaving northbound on Broadway Street, and they direct the cops right to the bad guys. If you make it more likely the bad guys are going to get caught, then you make it more likely that the bad guys won't try that kind of thing, and you can actually get justice. Here's what the FAA tells the Redmond Police Department. If you're going to fly a drone, a human being must have his or her eyes on the drone. So while one police officer is inside the police station and is directing the drone, controlling the drone and flying it and seeing on a screen in front of him what the drone is seeing down below, another police officer must run up the stairs to the roof of the police station. I'm not exaggerating. And they, King 5 had this story. I'll give them credit. The police officer on the roof is supposed to keep his eyes on the drone. And why is that? Well, he's got a radio, and he's talking to the guy down below who's directing the drone, and he's saying, oh, there's a giant Boeing that's coming in, and you should avoid the Boeing. Well, first of all, it's kind of a stupid set of thinking, I think, by the FAA. Are the police officers who are flying these drones to respond to a crime scene, are they going to jack that thing up to 5,000 feet or 10,000 feet before they start flying in the direction of the location? Probably not. They're going to fly that drone at 300, 400 feet off the ground. If there happen to be tall buildings, unless they're extraordinarily tall buildings, you wouldn't have to fly any higher than about, even in downtown Seattle, what's the tallest building? 72 stories. So fly at 1,000 feet. Now, other than on approach, how many commercial aircraft are flying at 1,000 feet? I used to fly, when I worked in TV, I would volunteer to fill in for the traffic guy when he was on vacation because I loved flying in helicopters. Now, I don't fly the helicopter, but I got to fly along with the pilot, and it was a lot of fun. And I, you know, I'd ask him how high above ground, average height above ground, are we? It's about 2,000 feet. We usually don't go below that. And so you're 2,000 feet up. Even low-flying aircraft, especially over populated areas, are not going to be down where the drone is. And if you don't have 70-story buildings in the way, if you have 5-story or 10-story buildings in the way, the drone doesn't have to fly lower than about two or higher than about 200 feet. So what's the problem? And if the officer on the roof sees something with his eyeballs that the drone operator can't see and gets on the radio and says, watch out for that hot air balloon or whatever. I just think the FAA is not thinking this one through. Let's go to Gizmo. Gizmo, you're a naysayer. We got about 2 minutes. Tell me why I'm completely off base about the police using drones.
Sorry, Lars. I don't have my 107 license for flying drones, but I've been studying up on it because I'm going to get it. And what the license says when you get it, if you don't have a license, you have to have line of sight for flying the drones, and you cannot fly over the top of people. When you do have the license, you can fly out of line of sight, but you have to avoid flying over people, and you have areas that you cannot fly in, no-fly zone, of course, like around airports and things like that.
Right. But should that apply to the cops?
Well, yeah, if they get a 107 license, go, take the course and and get the 107, and the operator's got a 107,
now,
you can fly wherever you want.
If you have a 107, can you fly over populated areas?
Yes.
Okay. So that's so you'd have to tell the police department, have everybody who wants to operate one of these get a 107 license and keep it current. Now we've got about a minute to the end of the hour. William, you're a naysayer. Tell me what the objection is.
For the drones being first responders, I think that's a total waste of tax dollars. I think what we should do is just put a microchip in everybody. No. And then you wouldn't need a
We're
drone.
We're not putting microchips
everybody
in people.
On the computer, right?
No. Well, no, why do you want my... you're jumping from using a drone, which is an observation device, to putting microchips in people's heads. We're not going to go along with Elon Musk or installing electronics in people's heads. But that's an interesting naysayer. William, thanks very much. It's First Amendment Friday on the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson.